We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Colin Barnicle on the hotline right now. We've got about 10 minutes. So,
Colin Barnicle, we've never met before, but now I've been going down the rabbit hole of art heists and found art, everything from... I'm about to pull the website up now. Just so many stolen famous piece of art.
But giant money. Like, giant money.
Oh, you have no idea, man. It is just, it goes on and on and on.
On March 18th, 1990, two men dressed as police officers robbed the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, making off with what has been valued as an over $500 million collection of paintings by Rembrandt, Degas, Manet, Vermeer, and others. Suspected to be the work of a criminal organization, to this day, there have been no arrests and none of the stolen art has been recovered. And now this mystery is explored in the new Netflix docuseries, This Is a Robbery. Please welcome co-director Colin Barnicle.
First of all, Colin Barnicle's maybe one of the greatest names I've ever heard.
Thank you so much. I'll pass it on to my father.
Well, welcome to the show. It's funny when you talk about art heist, because just regular people, we think money, we think diamonds, we think, you know, terms of those ways. Most people don't consider a very small object, something so concealable, can be worth such money when it doesn't, you know, it's all about perceived worth, right?
Yeah, I mean, depending on what you think of the art, it's either, you know, priceless or worthless. You know, if you can sell it, then it's, you know, if it's on the black market and it's so iconic you can't sell it, then it's, you know, is it worthless or is it priceless? You know, it depends on, I guess, who you're dealing with.
Yeah. Well, in this story, you're talking about a half a billion dollars never solved. And this has always kind of been intriguing to you. It's bugged you since you heard the story originally?
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm from the Metro Boston area, and so you had kind of grown up hearing about it. It wasn't in any great detail, but it's an unsolved mystery, kind of like, you know, if a UFO had abducted somebody in your backyard, you know, you're interested in it. You want to know, you know, what happened there. So I think my brother and I really kind of went down the rabbit hole in terms of trying to investigate it.
Yeah, well, it's the idea. I think we have this love affair of capers, of well-thought-out capers. We, you know, because it always feels victimless, even though it's not. But when it's art in a museum, you're thinking, wow, how did you do that? The balls that came in, these guys came in with guard uniforms, and they tied up the guards, and they worked their way through, and they knew just what to steal. And so you knew they were pros, because it was a half a billion dollars worth of stuff. And then was it Whitey Bulger? Was it the Boston mob? I mean, at that time, you know, that was still super active in Boston.
Yeah, what a rat's nest of criminality, right? In 1990 Boston, it's one of the things that we really wanted to portray in the film, is that this crime could have really only happened at one time in one place, and that's Boston in 1990. The criminals were definitely, as much as you could be a professional thief, they were professional thieves. They were comfortable in the criminality of going in police uniforms. And, you know, they spent 81 minutes in the museum. These guys were, you know, very comfortable in the idea that they could rob the place and get away, and they did.
Yeah. Well, and normally, you know, it's an inside job. The way the mob thing normally would work is somebody inside would go, hey, you know, there aren't any cameras. What'd you give me for that information? And then they formulate their plan. That guy walks away. And it just, these things happen, right? And the thing is, it's never shown up again, which is the weird part, because if it can't be sold, then how does it have any worth? Like you said.
Yeah, you know, it could be one of the things that, and I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, at the end of the movie Fargo, where Steve Buscemi kind of hides the money and then goes to his partner and is killed, that's not too far off from, you know, what's happened here. These guys were not Mensa members, and their, you know, their life expectancy wasn't too long because of the line of work they were in.
Yeah. Well, and when there's that much money, the other guys are like, you know, if we clip him and him and him, there's a lot bigger cut for each of us.
Yeah, and it's, you know, also, you know, you pass this stuff along and, you know, everybody's named Bobby, who's in the mafia world in Boston at that time, apparently. You know, one Bobby doesn't exactly know the difference between the Degas, Monet, between, a finger painting by another Bobby's child. It's not like these guys are, you know, getting out the microscope and looking at it and saying, oh boy, this one's stolen. But, yeah, it does seem to be that these were, you know, they were taken not for actually monetary value, but for leverage of a prison sentence, which sounds totally odd, but it actually happened multiple times in Boston before, because Boston is, you know, Boston.
So anybody listening, you know, Kansas City has its own mob history. So a lot of people here get this. So these guys would get popped on something else. And then you go, hey, what if I knew where this was and I could help you? Would that keep me from being in trouble over here? If I knew maybe some information about this thing that's worth a lot of money. And then sure enough, man, deals get cut, deals get made.
Absolutely. That's exactly, I think, was the thought process in Boston and should be the thought process in Kansas City. I know, you know, one of the lawyers we talked to had frequented going to Kansas City a lot and not to represent anybody on the level. So, yeah, I think the thought was, you know, that if we get caught up on something, that this could help us out. And
that's pretty
the problem
brilliant.
Became in Boston and around the mafia at that time was basically too many people were getting caught on wires.
Yeah. Well, and it was a bunch. That's such a big, like you said, a big rabbit hole, because it's everything from the Westies to like the Irish, the Italian, like everybody was in, and everybody was sometimes friends, sometimes not, and everybody knew a little bit about everything.
Yes.
To that
part
end,
of the problem here is in 1990. In Boston, the mafia got fractured, so not everybody is talking to each other either.
Hmm. Sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure everybody knows this is Colin Barnicle. He's the director of it's called This Is a Robbery. It's streaming on Netflix now. It's a killer documentary series, and I know Jake talked to you, but I just discovered this Jerry and Rita altar where they found the $160 million painting in their bedroom, sold it to an antiquities place. So crazy. How crazy. And it turns out there's no way those two people weren't like secret weirdo thieves.
Yeah. And we actually looked into it, because if you look at their pictures, they don't look unlike the, if you put a mustache on the wife, they don't look unlike the thieves in The Gardener, actually.
Yeah,
so we looked into that, where they could have been, and the actual car they were driving fits the description of the car on the street that night. So, you know, that was the one rabbit hole we went down. But there is examples of people robbing art just for art's sake and keeping it on their walls. And it does appear that they are one. And, you know, they traveled a lot. There's a lot of mystery to that one, too. There's a lot of mystery around just about every art heist.
Yeah, well, with the guy in Avignon, France, where they found it in his house, like 500 pieces of stolen art. He just couldn't stop stealing it, but he never sold it.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? That wasn't too long ago either. You know, you get the, I think in this case, it was probably, they cut the pictures out of the frame, so it's not, I don't think they were really looking forward to, you know, hanging on the wall. I think they were looking forward to using it for criminal means. But it'd be great if it was the case of, you know, the New Mexico couple or the guy in France where, you know, it was an art connoisseur. I have my doubts about that, but, you know, until every piece gets found, everything's just a theory, and that could be right, too.
Right. We'll have you back on, Colin. I hope you keep going down this rabbit hole. And that Jerry and Rita Alter thing, as well as, you know, the what happened in Boston, it's pretty fantastic, because we have such a different view of what a thief is when it's art for some reason. When it's that, like I said, I think it's because it feels more like a victimless crime, even though it isn't. But we feel like it is. Like we, and it takes a great deal more thought or chutzpah than just strong-arm robbing somebody or cracking open an armored car.
That's certainly true. It's not, and there was a lot of armored car robberies, but it wasn't exactly, get the cash, put it in your pocket, go down to McDonald's and, right. Buy a Happy Meal to wash the money. It was, it takes some, to move a Rembrandt, you got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, listen, I would know a Jackson Pollock from a paint tarp, I assure you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think the guys who went into the museum that night were art connoisseurs. So,
well, hey, man, anytime. Seriously, Colin, anytime. All right.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet, man. Take care. Netflix. This is a robbery. I'm tore up over this story.
I know you are. That's okay.
I'm going to send it to you because I want you to just take your time and read it because it reads like a bad movie script. Where do you see their pictures? They do not look like they're people who stole a $160 million painting and then hung it in their bedroom and died with it behind the door. You had to shut the door to see it. So the balls on these people, a husband and wife, had a normal little life, three-bedroom ranch, and had $1 million in the bank. She was a speech pathologist.
They had their own adventures.
Yes.
Nobody needed to know about.
But wouldn't you love to? What if you could really find out? Like, if they're clearly they're both dead. He died 5 years before her. She just died.
Or did they?
I think they're dead. But I mean, the nephew, clearly they held it together because the nephew has an estate sale. He doesn't know.
He's just thinking, I'm selling my relative's joint, whatever.
And then these people come down from Silver City Antiquity Store and they're like, oh, that's a neat painting. I'd give you $2,000 for it or whatever.
Which seems like a lot.
Yeah. They hang it. And people keep coming in going, Kooning, it's a Kooning, until they finally call the museum. They do some research. Yeah, one was stolen. Uh-oh. The chick walks in, it says, drops to her knees with a magnifying glass and is like, this is the one. This is the one. 30 years ago, this was stolen from our museum. And it's the craziest story. Then they go back and they start to research these people. They took all these great notes about everywhere they went. They documented everything. He was a writer. He even wrote a story about stealing from a museum. One of his last books was, not that it matters, but it drives me crazy not have the answer, The Eye of the Jaguar. And yeah, it's pretty good, crazy stuff, man. It's pretty amazing.
And they both never said a word to anyone else
no.
that anyone knows of.
No, well, that's the only way we get away with it. It's just
the two of you.
Yeah, it's just like the movie. You go, man, you can't go out and spend the money on a new Cadillac because everybody knows. And also you end up wire around your neck, you and your wife, and she's in a fur coat, and you're both dead, and kids just playing stickball find you.
It also, flip side of this, what if they told somebody they got lit one night, and they're like, you know that one time what we did?
You want to see it? You want to see it?
And you're like, okay, Susan, that's fine.
Well, it talks about these people took that painting home, and while they were waiting for the museum to come to them,
mm-hmm.
they realize people have seen this in our shop. We have what may be worth $160 million sitting in my house right now. So it's just every time a branch, they talk about every time a leaf hits the they're like, ah. Yeah, no, you would definitely.
It was my finger.
I swear to God, I thought you hit
I went
your
to
head
push
just
my ahead. I went to push my hair out, but it was my finger that hit the mic. Sorry. I'm glad I tickled you.
I didn't tickle me. You scared me. I thought you hit your face for a minute.
No, it was my finger.
Yeah, no, I'd literally have a gun in both hands. I couldn't sleep a wink because people smoked
for
$160
yeah.
million. Dollars.
Especially the early ones that were like,
Yeah.
And you didn't really take it seriously.
Normal people will come to you and kill you
yeah,
when there's $160 million in there.
I would be outside of Olathe PD going, you open yet? You open yet?
Lock me in. Lock me in.
I'm going to sit inside with this. We cool?
All right, go find it on Netflix. This is a robbery.
This is the Johnny Dare Morning Show.
The Johnny Dare Morning Show.
On 98.9 The Rock. Kansas City's rock station is 98.9 The Rock. KQRC, Leavenworth, from the Brown and Crouppen Studios. An Odyssey station.